Welcome everybody to the Chadwell. It's our second episode today. We got my co-host Kyle.
What's up?
And our first guest ever on Chad Watch, which is awesome because he's a legend, is Adam Brooke, Mr. Hashbash. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, now, appreciate you having me. Just happy to know I'm not a Chad.
couldn't be further from that. I guess what we'll do is we'll kind of start off and maybe me and Kyle will mention how we first met Adam, and then we'll let Adam give a little introduction about himself. I kind of have always, since I've been involved in cannabis or politics, it always, you know, took an interest in Hash Bash and in Ann Arbor and what was going on. Was always really familiar with Adam, and especially on the MI Legalized campaign. And the first time I actually like met Adam, I was helping my good friends at Highway 710, and I helped them enter into the Dab Wars at the old Ohm's Dab House in Detroit, which they won many times for what it's worth. And that's when I first met him in person. He's Adam, you know, he runs that and we talked about it too on a podcast that Adam and I were on the other day. Like that's a real competition. Like that's buying concentrate. And most of the people that were buying the judges kits, like Adam was pre-screening them to make sure that they're like on the level and shit, you know? So that was a much better competition than we have now and stuff. But anyway, that's the first time I really met Adam, and he's been doing a lot of good stuff, and I'm happy to have him on.
Awesome, man. The first time I remember meeting you, Adam, I don't know if you remember meeting me, but it was an event at Vehicle City in Flint. And it was before the election, and I was actually there doing voter registration with a couple of different people. And I remember meeting you with Rick Thompson and Jamie Lowell there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'll be honest and admit that I smoke so much weed that I don't remember either one of you. It took me years to know that the face that I saw associated with the name Chris Silva is the guy you see on the screen right now. And Kyle, I promise you that I will learn your face and associate it with your name.
But hey, man, Mr. Hashbash knows a lot of people, I'm sure.
I like to say more people know me than I know them.
Sure, that's fair.
I appreciate the respect.
Absolutely.
Well, awesome. Adam, why don't you maybe give us a small introduction about yourself, or maybe like the one person who's watching this who doesn't already know a lot about you?
Well, sure. As I like to say, the persona is much greater than the reality. And the truth is that I was a guy that didn't have any friends, that used to hang out. And my birthday's March 31st, which today happens to be my birthday.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
Thank you. And Hash Bash used to be April 1st. So when my friends back in the mid 80s moved to Ann Arbor to start college, of course, I wasn't going to college. There was no question about that. But I went and hung out and started partying. And I used to be the guy that would throw the parties, you know. And then I started throwing a party the night before Hash Bash every year. And I started showing up every year. And then I met the people in Ann Arbor that were actually putting on the Hash Bash, and I thought, well, maybe I could get involved. And then I figured out that, man, people pay attention to you. If you're an activist and you're doing good things and doing the right things, people call you on the phone to ask questions and get involved.
That's 1,000% true. I felt that before.
I liked that because I was a kid that was one of those goofy kids in school that didn't have any friends. And now all of a sudden I got people calling me and wanting to be involved and wanting to do what I do. And the cool thing was, it was all related to weed, which for me was about hypocrisy. And I got involved in this movement because of the hypocrisy involved in the war on drugs and how silly it is. And obviously weed has won the war on drugs, and absolutely, we were right. Now, we have a long way to go, so my days of being an activist are still, you know, I'm still in the midlife of activism here. But I've got involved because I wanted to do something constructive. I used to tell people I got involved in weed for the, you know, to meet the ladies. But the truth is, I've met thousands and thousands and thousands of people all over the country. And whether they know my name or not isn't important. I'm nobody. I'm a placeholder for the next guy who does what I do. And as this adventure occurred, being an activist and organizing Hash Bash, I organized it and was the MC for 25 years. At one point, I was looking, who'd we bring out for speakers? And I realized John Sinclair wasn't a part of Hash Bash because he never had been. He wasn't coming to speak. He wasn't. And I reached out and made a phone call to him. He was an award-winning DJ down in New Orleans.
What year was that?
That was 26 years ago, actually. So,
wow.
I called him and said, I'd love to have you come to Hash Bash. He said, that'd be great. I'd never been to one. And he had left the pop movement at that point. He was pretty sullied on how things were going back in the 80s, early 80s.
And sure.
He had worked for Normal doing lobbying and stuff in Michigan. And finally, he left. And I brought him up to Hash Bash. It was a great success having him there. Him and I became business partners. I became his road manager and his merchandising guru. And that enabled us to get where we're at today, both on a professional and personal level. So, you know, the movement, as people like to say, I like to tell people that my movement became your industry. And that's very much where we're at today. And Chad Watch, obviously, is looking at this industry. And, you know, this is not the industry that I envisioned, nor is it where we're going to end up. This is in its infancy. So this will be changed 1,000 times before we get there. And the reality is, I hope I live long enough to see total marijuana freedom. I mean, the yippies will tell you there is no such thing as a good pot law. And I truly believe that. There is no such thing as a good pot law. There are no tomato laws.
Right.
No, for sure. And I think definitely there's a lot of fluidity in what's going to ultimately end up happening in the industry. For me, it's really fascinating to think about how much change has occurred in just the couple years of licensure, right? And what that's going to look like long term. And then especially I'm thinking, so for someone like you that's been involved in it so long, like what was it like holding this movement up like in the like the 80s and 90s? Like not a lot really happened, so you know what I mean?
If you can imagine what a militia meeting is like, where a bunch of people who have a thought that others don't agree with have to hide out and meet, that's exactly where the weed game was back in the 80s and 90s. You know, there's activists coming out of the woodwork now because, well, they're not fearful of anything.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
In Michigan, I have a term for people like that. I call them aiders, E-I-G-H-T-E-R-S. Because prior to 2008, you didn't hear from these people because they were scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they want to run the show. So be careful of the aiders. The people like me that have been doing this a long time, you know, I didn't fight for the last 30 years so Pfizer could not be a part of this game. I can't wait till they bust into this game. They're going to legitimize medical marijuana from the rip. Coca-Cola?
Interesting perspective, yeah.
Can't wait for them to want to have medicated beverages because they'll put it on the map. Marlboro? Maybe if they drop tobacco, I'd like to see them roll in joints. I'm not into companies that push tobacco, so I can't necessarily agree to a partnership with that. But I always thought that these big corporate monstrosities would get into the game. People talk about them like they're the devil. They're not the devil. The government's the devil. The people that have treated us the way they have for the last 80 years. The people that have created a system that enabled us to get where we're at today. I mean, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing in these 37 states that have weed if it wasn't for the government and their actions against us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, as far as we've come, and like you said, we have come in the last couple of years, we've come a lot farther in 2, 3, 4 years than we did in 20. There's many of us, I'm 54 years old today. There's many of us that didn't think we'd get where we're at as quick as we did. Of course, John Sinclair will tell you that he thought it would take even longer. So, you know, we've come a long way, and we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, I agree. It's miles, not inches, you know, like that's what we're trying to eventually achieve. And I think that one of the things, when I think about kind of Hash Bash and just kind of this movement, I'm wondering, like, do you think like Ann Arbor is unique and special for having been able to foster this kind of like movement, or, you know what I mean? What makes,
I know the question.
What's the special sauce, you know?
So here's the answer to the question. It's real simple. If you have to study history to understand how we got where we're at today. The fact that Ann Arbor was able to decriminalize weed in 1972 and pass the $5 pot law, which then in the 80s they bumped up to $25 because they felt that they were the laughing stock of the nation with a $5 pot law. So now it's $25 fine with $25 court fee. So you pay $50. But that changed things. And yes, Hash Bash as a protest could have happened anywhere. But the scene that existed in Ann Arbor back in the day is why it exploded the way it did. Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, was the dope capital of the Midwest throughout the 70s. There are some major, major, major players that were moving tonnage through this area, and that helped create a community. And this community's always been a little different, always been a little more accepting, and it's because of that Hash Bash was enabled to get to the point where it was when I got involved. Because when I got involved, it was on a down turn because nobody cared. Weed was illegal, people still smoked it. People were stopping showing up, and we were able to get High Times involved, doing a little promotion. I like to point out that we used to send out faxes for all you youngsters out there that don't know. Facts are not the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Fax is a piece of paper that shoots out of a machine that someone sends from you across
the FAX.
Yes. And what you have to understand, sorry about the background noise. I'm at the hotel where we do the Hash Bash Cup, and they're starting to set up a little bit, so I apologize about the background. I got lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. It happens.
It's Chad Watch. It happens, man.
Yeah. But Ann Arbor was a special place for Hash Bash because the society and the community was different. The fact that the late 90s came by and hundreds of people started getting arrested at Hash Bash. That's state politics. That's the University of Michigan playing their game, claiming that they were state cops and needed to enforce state law and state property. Blah, 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 blah. Hey, this year the Attorney General is going to be on the stage, and you'll see her because she's about 4 foot whatever, 5 foot two. I don't know how tall she is, but we're going to find out. Because I'm going to be standing next to her. I'll be the guy with the joint in his hand blowing smoke in the Attorney General's face as I talk to her about where we're at, how we got there, and where we need to go. So I think it's great. We've come a long, long way. And the people involved are what made it happen.
Excellent, man. The people that are involved are what makes all this happen, and you're definitely, you know, a valued contributor, so we definitely appreciate the work you've done.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's really, when I say the people involved, it's not the stoners that made it happen. Stoners make very little happen, for the record. it's the opposition that made this happen. People that were arresting us that pissed off people who then caused the pissed off people to come protest. See, had they not been arresting people for weed, nobody would give a fuck. But they do. So
that's fair. Yeah.
You know, because of that, we got something to say. It's kind of simple, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the rest of American society is not like this. So people bitch and moan about their legislators, but they don't contact them.
No, absolutely. Right. That's 100% the, like, yeah, when I was doing political work, like, we would meet with people, like lawmakers, and, you know, I'd get like 25 people or something to call their office, and they'd call me and be like, oh my God, this is like the number one priority. Like, you know, and I'd be like, this is 20 people. What the fuck are you talking about? This is like a pretty low on the list, even, totally. You know what I mean? But like, they do what, you know, they respond, let me preface this by saying they do all suck, but like, they do have to, on the face of it, do something to appease you, even if it's just talk to you, and like, no one's reaching out to them. So if even 10 people like talk to them about something, they're like, holy shit, this is insane. Cause they're not getting calls about anything ever.
So that's something important. And it just so happens that my brother-in-law at one point worked for Carl Levin in his mailroom in Washington, D.C. many years ago. And I learned a valuable lesson. Every letter they got, they considered 100 people behind it. So when 5 of my friends would write a letter, that was important. We just saw something happen in Michigan with these bills that were proposed, where a small group of people started tooting the horn, and all of a sudden, these people were, legislators were getting phone calls and people sending them letters, and they didn't realize there was an issue, and that woke them up to the fact that there was an issue with these bills. So your political involvement, whether people think so or not, is very, very important. And these people pay attention to their constituents. They really do. Now, what they don't pay attention to is their non-constituents. So I encourage everybody to write your own representatives along with the other representatives and let them know that you live in their community and that you'll see them at their coffee hour to discuss this further. And you will. They're happy to talk to you. They want to learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, so that's kind of I think that's something that I think is lost on a lot of people, Adam, man, is that like a lot of people walking into the industry now, like they've never, especially people that maybe are a little bit younger than me and Kyle, you know, like they never experienced any of this. Like for most of their life, marijuana has been like relatively okay, legal, quasi legal, and then like super legal. And so I don't think that they understand that that there was a lot of shit that had to happen to get to this point. But I also think for many of us, these issues is what brought us into the political system and gave us the experience to be able to sit through and like figure this out. Like, you know, cause what, everything you're saying is exactly true, man. Like, we were able on the Wolf campaign, we were able to change the minds of like really hardcore conservative, Republicans on this because we just brought enough people who lived in their district to their coffee hour. I would bring them every time there was a coffee hour, I would bring like 19 old ladies that lived, you know, like 3 blocks from this guy. And, you know, he changed his mind. I know damn well he didn't give a shit. Like, he probably hates all wolves and wants them all to die. But, like, you know, they respond to pressure just like everyone else. And most of the pressure that they're getting is from a lobbyist. So whenever it does come from a direct constituent, like, it really does matter. So I just another plug for please call and email, do anything, go to the coffee hours. Even all if you think that. It's, you know, even if you think there's no way in hell they're ever going to agree with you, like you, if you don't do it, if you don't do it, nothing will happen for sure.
And,
you know,
and you actually have something they want. It's a 4-letter word.
Yeah.
VOTE. Mm-hmm. And you tell that guy, that lady, I don't agree with you and I didn't vote for you, but if you come on board with me, I very well may. And they horse trade all the time. They don't agree with the shit they're voting for half the time. That's but so they made true. A deal with somebody else and they said, I'll make you a deal. You vote my way, I'll vote your way. Everybody will win. So it's important that you understand the game before you try to play it. And then you play by the same rules that they're using.
Yep, absolutely, man. Absolutely. before I forget on this, another thing I wanted to get your take on, Adam, is the I was meeting my buddy who's involved in the Decrim Nature petition. He was telling me about the movement for that, and him and I were talking about, you know, it's interesting because with medical marijuana there was definitely a financial, you know, component. People, there's entrepreneurs who wanted to have that, and that was a big element of how it rolled out legislatively. And we were talking about how it seems to be less intense of that and like the ethnogenic movement and stuff. But I'm curious if you could fill us in what it was looking like when maybe the Medical Marijuana Act passed and we started to get the first caregiver stores in Ann Arbor. And then I'm curious your take on like if you go to Ann Arbor now, it's basically a Chad's playground. You know, there's SkyMint, there's all of these like really mids producers. And then even some of the caregiver or legacy stores, you know, they just really got lazy and like they're not competitive on pricing. They're not very innovative at anything. They just kind of been skirting on that they're Ann Arbor. People come to Ann Arbor because it's a weed town. People from Ohio come there, Ohio custies, you know, like I'm just curious what you just kind of your take on how that's rolled out and how different it probably has gotten from being originally what I hope was purely patient based, you know?
Well, that's the thing, is that when it comes to medical marijuana, the industry knew long before it got there that the medical side is the small side. And the reality is that no
matter how you change the conversation.
Right. I'll be honest. We use medical patients to get our foot in the door. And then we lied and said that's not what we were doing. That's exactly what we were doing. We were parading sick and dying people around. I used to show, no, Chris, it's the truth. We should be proud of what we did. We had to show sick and dying people to convince people that this stuff worked.
That's true. That's a very valid point.
We used to literally say to people, yeah, well, when your wife gets cancer, I mean, now the reality is this. As a political activist, I would show up at rallies with a trunk full of canes, walkers, and wheelchairs. Hey, Chris, you look a little gimpy. Could you take this and walk with it up to the rally? Because, you know, now all of a sudden we got a bunch of I'm sitting in a wheelchair so I can talk this shit. Now we got a bunch of crippled people, and we're talking about medicine here. Oh, maybe these people have something to say. The problem is this. Nobody needed to make money on the medicine. There's not enough people. And this is what these people didn't. This is what the Chads don't understand. The Chads could have financed medical marijuana. They could all have a medical side to what they do, where they give away product, where they literally all had doctors. They could afford it. Instead, look and see what's happening. What's happening is people are dropping their medical licenses as fast as they can and just going with their rec license because the system's fucked, not because they don't really care about people.
Sure, yeah, it's tough.
If they had a better system, they may participate. But the reality is that, you know, we fought for medical because we knew that that would change the rec opportunities. And it sure did. Matter of fact, the proof is in the pudding is what they say, right? So California took 20 years to go from medical to rec. Michigan didn't. Michigan took 10 years. Why is that? Same reason that the East Coast states are going wreck right away, because they now realize how things work. The game has changed. This has all been about moving the ball forward and changing attitudes. I used to compare this to the civil rights movement. Not that we can compare anything to any civil rights struggle that anybody went through. I'm not doing that. But the movement itself, you know, in the mid-50s, they passed laws that said it was okay for a black man and a white woman to marry, to walk down the street holding hands, all that stuff. But you can bet that down in, you know, Biloxi, Mississippi, the sheriff didn't care what color you were. You two weren't walking down my street holding hands together. And it took time before the sheriff was no longer in tune with what the people wanted, even though the law had already changed, you know. And that's exactly what happened with weed, is that we passed a law. And, okay, first of all, the sky didn't fall. Second of all the children didn't start smoking weed. Third of all, you know, the children that have been born since weed has been legal don't come out with tails on and horns. I mean, you know, shit like that. So all this reefer madness and scare tactics that they used against us failed, and it failed miserably. The problem is they didn't learn. They needed to learn, and they didn't learn what they needed to know before they rolled out recreational. And now medical gets left behind because nobody cares. You know, I mean, nobody should suffer. There's no reason for people to suffer, especially if there's a substance like cannabis on the planet that is so easy to produce and to take care of people with. And that's what many of us are fighting for, is the normalcy, is the reality that, oh, and we hear it all the time. You know, I hear people say, oh, weed's legal. Why you guys still do hash bash? Well, weed isn't legal. Weed is regulated. Tomatoes are legal. You know, I mean, I can't smoke weed anywhere I want. Matter of fact, it's still against the law to smoke weed in Michigan in public, which is why hash bash is so important, because it's a big fuck you to the man with 20,000 people standing there smoking weed this year in front of the attorney general.
Hell yeah.
No, for sure, man. I think that's like the great part about it. It's kind of like sums up the culture in a nutshell, you know.
How about this? What's better is she contacted Hash Bash. Hash Bash didn't contact her.
Even better.
Even better. That tells you that we are a political force to be dealt with. The fact that she might have made promises when she was there in the past and she didn't deliver, well, she's going to be held accountable when she shows up. You can bet that.
Well, she knows that the marijuana community almost exclusively got her elected. If you think back to the Democratic convention when she ran against Pat Miles, the establishment had chose Pat Miles specifically to be on the bill. And then, you know, marijuana activists within the community said no thanks and showed up in numbers for somebody like Dana, who had been really participating in everything cannabis up to that point. And so they turned the game, and then she won. And I think she's starting to realize that maybe she should make sure she utilizes the same base.
I mean, we have an issue with the governess too, because the governess, and that is the proper term for a female governor, right? We would call her governess. I do, at least.
I'm not sure.
No,
yeah,
no disrespect. Yeah, in my world, she's the governess. Anyways, the governess made all kinds of promises also that she hasn't delivered on to us. She came to Hash Bash prior to being elected, looking for our votes. And nothing has happened. Nothing major has happened. So these people need to be held accountable. And obviously, when it came to Attorney General, the alternative was a problem. So Dana had votes coming from us just on the fact that she wasn't who her opponent was, you know. I'm not unhappy. I'd just like to see more happen and a little more respect given to us now that the law has changed. I mean, the reality is the Attorney General's office is about to turn over 6 foreign nationals to the federal government because they got caught growing 3,000 plants in the, you know, western part of the state. I'm not about that, man. Growing weed shouldn't get you indicted, period. I don't care how much weed you're growing.
No, I hear you, man. I think this is like a good, like another just reminder of like what we've all been echoing on this show is like, you can never let up, you know, like people have to continue to reach out and tell people like, hey, you know, they're elected officials. I don't like this shit. You know, like you said this and this, and you didn't have, you know, like that's part of the problem actually is whenever we do get people in is a lot of people that, you know, maybe we're sending those emails and phone calls and in-person visits and going to lobby days and all that shit. Like, you know, if they say, oh, blue team won and we got all the homies in, like, I don't really need to do anything. It's on autopilot. But like these people still need the pressure, you know, and that's what I tell a lot of advocates and people that I run into is for us, like, it's weed all the time. Like, that's like our shit. But to the lawmakers, they're not thinking like that. Like, they have like way other shit that's like where people are paying them off and stuff too. So like, they have like a totally different set of circumstances and priorities. And even if it is like somebody who's ideologically down and like who's on the team already, like, you have to really continually have those touches to make sure that they're keeping up with you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, listen, we have a long way to go, and we need to keep beating this drum, because I believe, and I'm on the board of Michigan Normal, so for me to say this somewhat is painful. I truly believe that Keith Straub and his friends had started Normal. They were interested in getting weed legal so they could use it. I'm not sure they were really convinced that they would get weed legal so everybody could use it. And I know that sounds kind of odd, but the push was very different back in the day. Now the push with fuel, food, fiber, and medicine has become totally different. We're on a different playing, you know, a different level in the playing field at this point. And we have a lot more people on our side. That's the other thing. You know, a lot of people have figured out that cannabis is medicine. And, you know, Dennis Perone once said that all cannabis use is medicinal. And you may not understand that, but if you don't, that's okay. There are many of us who do, and that's what we're fighting for, is for the ability for people to use cannabis as they see fit, period. There is no harm. They still haven't shown us the bodies. If I tell you, if they want to create an anti-cannabis person, take me to the bodies. Show me the bodies. I will flip the script so quick. I'll become a zealot in a minute. Show me the bodies. Educate me on how I'm wrong. And I've been waiting, and nobody says you're wrong. Now, it's kind of nice that law enforcement is no longer the biggest problem when it comes to cannabis. Think about it. Mm-hmm. Except they still have their foot in the door, those guys. Because we wanted to close the door. And as soon as they heard we were closing the door and cutting them out of it, boy, the Chiefs of Police Association jumped up, the Lieutenants Associations jumped up, and they said, well, wait a minute, we're law enforcement, and we've been handling cannabis for years, and we need some of that money. You're getting money now. Give us some of that money. You know, we don't get to arrest these people anymore. We don't get to seize all their property and take all their cash. So you need to make up for what you took away from us. Because, you know, we're still out there fighting the good fight, and we'll make sure these people follow the law and do what they need to do and blah, blah, blah. Are you out of your mind? Once again, if we started this conversation over and we took the word marijuana and cannabis and replaced it with tomatoes, we'd sound like three idiots sitting here talking about tomatoes.
Absolutely.
I want to get to the point where throwing a butt at somebody is considered an assault, like throwing a tomato at somebody is considered an assault. And that's the worst possible crime you could ever get from a tomato. So why are there people locked in cages? In cages. They locked me in a cage with crazy people in a prison. People like that hurt people and did horrible things and didn't follow directions when they were told no 10 times. Mm-hmm. And one guy was in the joint with me, busted 3 times selling $10 bags of weed. 3 times. All right, you dumbass, maybe you do belong here, but not for weed. Yeah. I mean, and that's all going to change. I promise you, in the next 5-10 years, it's over. They can't send you to prison anymore. No, all you got to do is go to trial, and no jury's going to convict you because the jury thinks weed is legal and doesn't understand why the prosecutor's making such a big deal if weed is legal.
No, man, I think it's exactly kind of what you were saying about the your example with the like the civil rights stuff is society is, you know, the law got there a little bit quick, but society's moved on really quick on this. I think a great example of this is, you know, when I run into people and they're just a normal voter, they don't smoke a lot of weed or they don't smoke weed or something. They think that the licensing for this is like anything else. You just go get a business license, you just do it anywhere. Cause in their head, when they voted to make weed legal, it became when we go out and tell people we want it to be like tomatoes in the weed community, they're like, bro, you're crazy.
You're nuts,
that in the normal community, they're like, oh yeah, like, cause that's kind of how it is already, because we voted for it. Right. So I think like sense. There's just kind of this disconnect.
I will tell you, eventually,
it's getting shorter, you know?
I will tell you this. Obviously, I mentioned my brother-in-law worked for Carl Levin. He worked for Carl because their families are friends. So at a family function at one point, I mentioned to Carl that me and my people were coming with some ballot initiatives to legalize weed. And is there any way we could get him on board? I mean, you know, I know we're at a family function and I shouldn't be talking business, but it's an opportunity to talk to a sitting U.S. senator. You take it, right? Mm-hmm. I said, Carl, is there any way? Tell me what I need to do to get you on board. You know, do you need to be educated? How can I help? What can I do? He said, listen, I'm going to tell you this. You and your people can write and pass any law you want. Me and my people make the rules. We'll win every time. Now, a lot of people, because they think that you go vote on something, that's what you're voting for.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Then Laura comes in and makes the rules.
Well, you vote on 12 sentences. You vote on a one-page piece of paper and what that says. And what it says is, we want these things to change, and then you need to make it so it happens. And when the legislature and you know says, all right, we're going to give this to the health department, and then they figure out, no, we need to give it to the licensing people. So it made that little switch. Because originally we were in the health department. We were going to be treated like that. No, now we're in LARA. Now we have our own division of LARA. You know, we bought all new computers and new office space and all that with marijuana money for that for that department. They're thrilled to have us at LARA. The director can't get enough people. He can't hire people fast enough. He's growing so fast. But those are bureaucrats. See, their job is to manipulate what's going on, not to change it in a foul way, but to make it happen. You know, to get the licensing out, to do the investigations, to do the inspections. And, you know, Michigan started out with this horrible system, and then they realized that it was being taken advantage of by the wrong people, so they cleaned it up. Now anybody can get a license. Basically, all you need is a little bit of money, or a lot of money, depending on how you look at it. You know, again, like tomatoes, it should be treated. What kind of license do you need to grow tomatoes? You don't. Someone the other day, and I use this all the time, and someone the other day tried to challenge me and said, well, but, you know, once you start getting into the dispersing of your product to grocery stores, you have to follow regulations and you have to this and that. I said, wait a minute, that's not law. Those are rules. We're happy to play by the rules that make sense. Yeah, pesticides shouldn't be on tomatoes. We eat tomatoes. Shouldn't be pesticides. No pesticides for weed. That's all you got to do is make a rule. But instead, they're creating a system that the average guy can't get into, can't participate in, and might as well still keep growing and selling on the street. Because the reality is, from a pot person's point of view, small batch growers still produce the best product out there. And we're looking for the best products. We don't care. You know, Budweiser wants to be the king of beers. Mm-hmm. Let them. Someone's got to be the number one seller in America, and that's Budweiser. In the meantime, are you aware that the company purchased all the craft breweries they could? So people say, oh, no, I'd rather use a craft brewer. They're doing that in cannabis now, too. They're saying, oh, I'm looking for the craft grower. Oh, really? The craft grower that's owned by who? The craft grower that's working under what corporation's license? Which one? You pick the Chad, and I'll tell you which craft growers are going to end up working for them. Because that's what's coming next, is that these guys are going to start these little 200 300 plant grows that are under our micro license, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to get involved. People are going to realize that they're growing good product, and they're just going to start getting gobbled up. And hey, let's bring your brand under our umbrella. Matter of fact, we'll let you grow as a craft grower, your little batch in our system. But it's now going to have our name on it. And that's coming. That's the future. That's what happened in alcohol.
No, for sure, man. I definitely agree with you. I think that's even some of the busier stores I hear are starting to speak more like traditional alcohol retailers, like talking about shelf space and kind of like it's being flipped from more like we're the people selling wholesale. We used to be the plug, like we were offering a service, and now they're like, no, we're the plug. We're offering
the tables
you,
have turned.
Yeah, in yeah. We're offering you the shelf space, motherfucker. You want to play ball? Like here's mm-hmm. the, and that's how it is with alcohol, and that's how it was for. That's why these guys, the big alcohol, bought the craft is so they could control the shelf space, you know?
Correct.
So I think that stuff's all.
That's what an influx of inventory will do, you know? It used to be that the stores were fighting to find any products, licensed product that they could find, anything that was available. And now there's so much of that they can be selective with stores. It's a little different.
Yeah, no, it's a lot different. So we could definitely talk on this for hours, but I wanted to start trying to wrap it up a little bit. Adam, I guess, like, do you have any final thoughts on Hash Bash? Please give a plug for Hash Bash and the Hash Bash Cup. Let people know how they can if there's still opportunities to get involved in that as a, you know what I mean? And then just kind of a few parting words, and then we'll kind of shut her down.
Well, I appreciate that. The Hash Bash Cup is an event that some friends came up with, and they asked me to help out. I produced the event for them. It takes place at the Wyndham Gardens Hotel, 2900 Jackson Road in Ann Arbor. You can find tickets at hashbashcup.com or purchase them at the door. We start Friday at 3 p.m. and go till Sunday at 6 p.m. It's a three-day event. Anything you could possibly want, food, beverage, entertainment. There's 60 vendors. It's the shit. It's like no event you've ever seen, and I don't talk about it. That's about all I'm going to say about it. If you want to know about it, go read the website. You won't find any information there either. But what I can tell you is that it's the greatest event you'll ever be at. So I encourage people to check it out. Hash Bash is Saturday at high noon on the Diag. And I would encourage people to show up on the Diag and see the speakers that'll be there and hang out and have a good time. This is the 51st annual Ann Arbor Hash Bash. You may see it advertised as the 50th anniversary. And that's because the 50th anniversary is also the first annual, if you understand the linguistics. It's pretty simple. But it's going to be a party, and I encourage people to come check it out.
That's awesome. So real quick before we roll out, and I know, Adam, that you might have had a time crunch, so if you need to pop off, that's cool. But if not, I'd love to have you on. We're going to, before we have some exit announcements before that, though, I want to just check in on March Chadness.
March Chadness, baby. Let's take a look.
It's gotten, I'm about to cut off voting, and I got to say, like, I might have fucked up on the seating. I might have had people seated inappropriately, but it was looking pretty close. So our final four contestants, we had number one, Beardus, against a five seed, Cannalicious. And this one is a super close. This has been like 59-41, like all day. This is like some real March Madness. And then we've got Skymint Common Citizen, and this is just a shit show. Like Skymint's all the way. It's like 80%, but let's check in here. And yeah, it looks like it's a Cannalicious victory, 53% to 47%. So that's a five seed. That's kind of an upset, right?
Like that's St. Peter's right there.
That's exciting. And then yeah, Skymint 82%. So these guys are moving on to our March Chadness championship, and voting will start on that in a couple hours. We'll definitely have a nice feature on the the scumbags who win this on the next episode.
Can this game end in a tie?
I was thinking about, I mean, here's the thing.
I mean, how
everybody's
does
a loser in Chad Watch.
Not you know? End up tied. That's my only question.
Well, Beardus lost to Canalicious, which is
I understand. I don't understand how these things.
I don't understand how. Anyway, so it was. There's a lot of hate out there for all these companies. So like it's just. But anyways, we appreciate everybody for participating. We're gonna get a nice dollar sign trophy and you know some nice mementos like that for the winner, I guess, you know. So we'll that'll be a fun one too. And then I guess just a couple exit announcements. The Decrim Nature Michigan people, they started collecting signatures in the last few days. I encourage everybody to try to get out there and sign it. I know that they'll definitely be at Monroe Street Fair and Hash Bash. Please go out and sign it. If you run into me personally as an individual, I will always have petitions on me. I can get you some. I can have you sign it. And then also, I wanted to give just a quick plug on April 14th at Grand Rapids in the Wealthy Street Theater. There is a showing of Fantastic Fungi, and it's a fundraiser for the ballot committee that's spearheading this. And Chad Watch is a sponsor of the event, because Chad Watch wants you to get high on drugs that aren't legal yet. I mean, we want all drugs to be legal. Nobody should ever be in jail for this shit ever. And their initiative actually does some things to kind of reduce some of the penalties that are built into the laws on other controlled substances. So it lifts all of the boats. And we just want people to do their part. Kind of like that's been a big theme of this episode, is everybody please talk to your elected officials when shit happens that you don't like or you think's fucked up. Let them know, even if you know there's 100% never going to listen to you or agree with you. Just
you
please,
gotta
please,
tell
please them. You have to do it, because otherwise it will never ever get better. And also just know that there's literally been generations of activists that have been pushing this shit forward for generations. I mean, literally generations, and oftentimes decades, without seeing much real progress, that have kept this movement alive. And it's on you to pick up the goddamn phone. It's like it's the bare minimum you can do. But just
that's right.
Please do it. So, what do you got, Kyle? You want to bring us out?
Yeah, man. Well, I don't know about what time you're going to be there, but I'll definitely be on the Diag by high noon. I might come down Friday, not sure yet, but definitely going to be there Saturday. Definitely going to be hanging around at the Cup too. So hopefully Adam will be able to link at some point, maybe smoke one or something. That would be awesome.
Definitely.
But definitely looking forward to it, especially after last year. I don't know if, Chris, if you made it last year during the small COVID gathering. I thought it was cool as hell that people still, despite being told not to.
Well, wait, you're not going to tell us.
Yeah.
Wait, you've been telling us for 50 fucking years we couldn't do it. Why would we?
My question is,
what's wrong with the Chads that are in our game that decided that they should do this virtually and not say fuck you to the man and show up? But I'm not necessarily calling those guys out, because I got to
work. Sure, no, I get it. And I'm not trying to start that war either. But
and where's their virtual event this year? Never mind.
Everyone's back in business, back to business. Yeah, so business as usual. Hopefully another awesome Hash Bash. And yeah.
And yeah, everybody's got like a couple days left too to buy one of the treasure maps from Sons and Daughters for Hash Bash. Please, another plug for that. You can go, I believe you can find them at many places in Ann Arbor. And I believe there's a website. We'll put that we'll drop that in the comments and stuff for people in a second here. It's a really, really great cause. And they'll also have a booth down. And here's what they look like. There's a bunch of opportunities to get a bunch of free shit and reduce cost stuff at a bunch of dispensaries all across Ann Arbor, and you can do it until like Monday or Tuesday too, so you don't have to squeeze these all into like your one day there or something. And then there's if you collect all of them, you can get entered for one of these awesome prizes. So I just want to give a plug for that too, and make sure people know that it's a really great value and it's a really good good cause.
Cool.
Well, I think that's gonna do it for us today. Thanks everybody for for watching and your comments and your hilarious DMs to the Chad Watch Instagram, and
onto the finals.
Yeah, onto the finals, and let's see who wins. So
cool.
Thanks everybody.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks, Adam.